My talk is not necessarily about proximal soil sensing, but I hope you enjoy it all the same. Acknowledging my co-workers, Dr. Grunwald, Sigmund, and Comerford, and I'd like to thank for the lab analyses, Mion An and Chun Hao Chu, as well as the pathology lab and the forest soil lab. And the funding source was USDA. So we see in Florida a very large potential to sequester soil carbon, and it is already the among the U.S. states, the state that holds more carbon per area basis. It loses only for Minnesota because it's just a bigger state. Now, Florida, on the other hand, Florida experienced the second most highest increase in CO2 emissions due to transportation and power plant and other sources. So that's a big concern to now use soils to sequester carbon. And also, sustainable land management requires understanding of soil carbon and some of the dynamics. So some of the properties you'll see here, we hope that will elucidate on some of these dynamics. So the objectives were to model the distribution of soil carbon along our across the study site that we have. It's a fairly big watershed in Florida. And four depths were measured, up down to 180 centimeters. We also measured from 0 to 30 centimeters in the surface soil carbon fractions. And again, the soil carbon fractions will give us an idea of how much potential storage of carbon can be done and how much carbon can be lost by studying both recalcitrant and labile carbon fractions. We compare different methods to upscale carbon fractions and total soil carbon. And we also aim to identify the major environmental determinants so that maybe in the future, if we see a land use shift and land use is correlated with soil carbon, we maybe can forecast what will happen with soil carbon and so on. This is the study area. It's 3,600 square kilometers in north central Florida. We have a predominant subtropical climate with a lot of rain and high temperature that fosters decomposition, but it also fosters vegetation production. Geology in this area is 90% marine sediments, and 10% in the west side of it is karst terrain with very porous calcareous terrain. Land use varies from pine plantations to wetlands and upland forests. It's very mixed land use. I'd also like to mention that Florida, we have the hurricane problem and a lot of wildfires, so these tend to change the area quite a bit. So field sampling was collected throughout 141 sites, and we collected four depths. And we try to use land use and soil type, soil orders, as a guidance for stratified random sampling. So in the surface, we measure total carbon by dry combustion, hydrolyzable carbon extracted using 6-normal chloride acid. We calculated recalcitrant carbon by the difference. And we also measured hot water extractable carbon that we're going to call here dissolved organic carbon. And we did some incubation to also measure mineralizable carbon, and that was taken from the 15th to 29th day after incubation. Now, in the deeper horizons, we only measured TC. All properties were skewed, so we had to log transform it and work in the log domain. And we did training and validation. With the data. We randomly separated on a per depth basis. So we had different validation and training sets at each depth. And here's the models with the methods we tried. The first one, log normal kriging, is just an interpolator, a statistical technique throughout. So it incorporates the global trend model into the prediction. Now, the other two are regression kriging methods, and for the first one, stepwise multiple linear regression was used to map the global trend. And then the second one, regression kriging, was used to map the global trend. And then the residuals were mapped using log normal kriging. They're added to the global trend, and then you have the final prediction. Okay, so these are the three methods. So our variables look like this. Recalcitrant carbon accounted for approximately 75% of total carbon. That means that the hydrolyzable carbon was about 25%. Dissolved organic carbon accounted for 15% of total carbon. I'd like also, usually total carbon decreases with depth, but you'll see somewhat otherwise in the following maps. And finally, we did a profile estimate here. We aggregated from 0 to 100 centimeters to have a 1 meter depth profile. So this is the only big table I'm going to show you today. So you can see that for the training, the log normal kriging performed the best. And that is only because kriging is an exact interpolator. So you would expect that at the sampling locations, the measurements would be the same. Now, if you look at the true validation, it varies. So log normal kriging was best for some of them. Here, regression kriging with multiple linear regression was best. And then regression tree picked some of these ones. So it really varies. What that means is, well, when log normal kriging was a preferred method, that means that the spatial dependence or the spatial structure of total carbon accounted for most of the variability. We also found out that very little correlation was found between the environmental properties we tested and total carbon. And I actually forgot to mention that we tested 59 different environmental properties, and that was Landsat imagery, topography, climate, and so on. So when regression kriging was best, it means that, well, environmental correlation accounted for some of the variability. And we actually expected more coming to regression kriging than to log normal kriging. Some of the maps, these are in standard deviation units because the scale was very different from one to the other. But the patterns tend to repeat themselves, and that is because the soil carbon fractions were highly correlated with total carbon. So what you see is that you can look at these carbon fractions as a function of soil carbon. But I'd like to call attention to different outputs and how they look like. So when you have log normal kriging, the maps tend to be smoother when compared to regression kriging. So here you can really see that some of the environmental properties were picked by the models, and then you see the more variable patterns, more clear-cut patterns. When you look at total carbon along the depth, Florida is a little bit different. You can expect to find the same pattern in other places in Florida that, well, overall, carbon decreases with depth. So you have high carbon here, and then it goes lower. But in spotic horizons, areas dominated by sponosols, carbon reappears with a high value. So it disappears and then reappears in spotic horizons, then disappears again. But because of scale, you can't see a lot of the patterns. So in standard deviation units, you see the same patterns appearing over again. So again, these soil carbon along the depths was correlated among themselves, so that the same patterns reappeared over and over. And I'm going to discuss about these hotspots and so on when we look at the next map, which is the aggregation of from 0 to 100 centimeter. So the map, the same patterns appear, like in the south area, the low carbon here and the high carbon here. And if you look at soils in general, you see that some of the hotspots are associated with the appearance of spodosols in these areas. So the medium to high carbon in this big orange area is really associated with this strain of spodosols. Now, the red areas, the highest carbon was actually derived from wetlands. Wetlands, as you know, is anaerobic processes that dominate. So you have slower decomposition, higher accumulation of carbon. So carbon is really high in these areas. And then the medium region here is usually associated with pine plantation and agriculture, and to some extent urban areas and so on. The green area separated really well in all the maps. So you have excessive drainage here. This is the area of karst terrain, so it's very porous, very high infiltration. And here's the dominance of antisols, very low productivity. And so you have low carbon production associated with high infiltration and high loss of carbon to the profile. Jumping to the conclusions. As you saw, carbon along different depths and soil carbon fractions reflected themselves. That was a little unusual. We would expect a little bit different, but they were highly correlated. So since log normal kriging was usually the best method, it tended to repeat the maps over and over. Soil carbon was greatest in the surface, then in wetlands and saturated horizons, and in spotic horizons with accumulation of organic matter down the profile. Well, and relating to the last objective, we saw that soil type played a role, especially spodosols. And when you look at antisols, they are related to low carbon and high infiltration in this specific area. Land use, especially wetlands, and soil hydrologic properties that relate to soil overall saturation, they were the main determinants. I'll leave you with that, and thank you for the attention.
Any questions?
What relationship to the environmental covariates were you expecting in incrementing them? I mean, you tested 9, but there's some that just weren't available to come back to the formative environment?
Okay. The relationships that we expected most were actually related to wetlands and saturated conditions, and they were picked up. Some of the properties that were not picked up, and we have I would expect one specific one. We have the Cody scarp crossing, and it's an escarpment that you have a very high difference in elevation. And along this scarp, you have some slope. So that's not usual for Florida, and we had a chance to work in an area that had some topographic relevance. And so I would expect some topography playing a role. And satellite imagery that, you know, indices, vegetation indices, we would expect vegetation production to correlate with soil carbon. We didn't find it. It was in a core, this big. I don't know exactly the value, but one of the ordinary augers was augered. Now, I extracted the properties because we had digital elevation model and Landsat imagery. They are both 30 meter pixels. So I worked with that. Now, to produce the final map, I produced in 100 pixels, just because I wanted to use some sophisticated way to do it.
So the assumption that you make is that the average that you measure in that core
covers the whole 30 meter. But one thing here, I extracted the properties using the 30 meter, and I only extrapolated to create the maps using the 100 meter.
So just one core though? Did you take multiple in composite or just one?
No, yeah, it was composite.
It was.
We collected four samples at each site.